We are back at it. The Pistols Firing Podcast is back with you on a Thursday. We are 16 days away from kickoff of the college football season. Summer has flown by. Joining me is Kyle Porter. Kyle, can you believe summer's almost over?
It's pretty crazy. We are 16 days from Oklahoma State, but only 14 days, I think, from the first college football game of the season. So it's coming up fast. It's going to be fun, obviously. But yeah, it's just 2 weeks away. It's pretty crazy.
What's the big Thursday night game this year to kick off the season?
Oh, I can't remember. I feel like it's always like
South Carolina versus somebody.
South Carolina's always involved.
They're always the Thursday night game. It was like them and A&M 1 year.
Yeah, it was. And I feel like LSU is always the team that plays in Jerry World on like Saturday night.
Hawaii plays Cal on the 26th of August before anybody.
That's a real game?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hawaii versus Cal on Friday, August 26th. Then it's Thursday, September 1st. There's a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Yep, and South Carolina's at Vandy. Conference game first week.
It'll be on ESPN. That's great.
We got a good survey to talk about here. Oklahoma City Dave. I gave him that's his proper name. Oklahoma City Dave, aka OKC Dave, did his annual survey of Oklahoma State fans. We're going to have him on the podcast. I just perused the results, and it's always interesting. Dave does a really good job with this thing, and it's always fun to talk to him about it.
Yeah, I'm going to call him in just a second. First, I wanted to talk about Coop Ale Works. I tried your favorite, the Elevator Wheat.
Yeah? What'd you think?
Pretty good. I tried it for the first time. Like I said the other day, we got some last week in or when we were up there at Coop, and I was a big fan. It was good.
Did it unseat the F5 for you?
No. The F5 is still my number one.
You love IPAs, I guess.
I do. My wife does not, but I do. So yeah, the Elevator Wheat was solid. But yeah, let's call Dave. Should we call him on his landline? He gave me a landline and a.
He still has a landline. I guess that's dad status. He's got two kids.
I think he's working.
Okay. So you're calling like his desk. It's gonna be like.
Complex litigations.
Complex litigation. This is John.
Okay. How's your dog doing?
Could you hear
her? Yeah.
Hey, guys.
What's up, Dave?
Complex litigations. This is Dave.
Yeah, you're right. I missed an opportunity there. Definitely.
Got to plug the company, man.
Sorry about the technical difficulties there. We're back, though.
No problem at all. Are we live? Are we on the air?
We're live. We're not cutting into your lunch hour, are we?
No, not at all. I set aside a special time for you guys, so it's all good.
Well, Dave, first of all, before we get to the survey, we want to thank you for coming out last week. We had a lot of fun. You sent in some great questions, and yeah, it was a good time, so we appreciate that.
Absolutely. I like Carson, enjoyed the Oktoberfest that they had on hand there. That was pretty good stuff, so.
Yeah, I think Dave was there to show support and, like, you know, he's a friend of the blog, but I think also he kind of wanted to see if anyone else was going to show up.
Yeah, I told you guys there was a little bit of a morbid curiosity that I had to see if I was going to be like me and Mrs. Pistols basically showing up, you know? So I was surprised. You guys did a good job getting the word out and had a pretty good crowd there. So that was good.
Well, it was definitely in play that it was just going to be you two. So no, we had a good time. And as always, we appreciate you you being there. And just all of your efforts on the blog and the stuff you write. Speaking of stuff you write, I wanted to talk about the survey. We've talked about it a little bit, but you've been putting this out for how many years now?
I think this was the ninth year, pretty sure.
The ninth year. Has it gotten more or less fun the longer it goes?
That's a good question. I mean, I still enjoy it. It's a lot of work, but I still do enjoy it. Some of the questions, like I need to shake it up a little bit more. I mean, the thing is the more new questions I add, the harder the work is because I don't have the old data to just kind of copy and paste and add it on. But I'm kind of getting bored with some of the questions, so I need to. I don't think there's that many surprising results, so I need to find some more intriguing questions to ask. But no, I still do definitely enjoy it, and it's fun to get as you know, it's fun to get positive feedback. People that, I don't even know that I have this weird internet thing going on that'll come up and be like, hey, man, I saw the survey. So that's kind of fun. So
it's 9 years old. So it's basically as old as the Mike Gundy rant. It's basically that's how long you've been doing this.
Yeah, 9 years old. I mean, it was pretty informal at first. I mean, I started it because I used to be a poster on the Rivals message board, and people were posting like, hey, how many games do you think we're going to win this season? It was just like there'd be like 50 responses, and everyone would say there. You know, it was just as like a data guy, it really bugged me because there was no way to like really get a grasp on where the fan base stood as a whole. So, I think the first year we had like 400 responses, or I had 400 responses, something like that. So, to get up to like 1,600 is pretty cool, and hope it continues to grow. But
yeah, it's pretty awesome. I wanted to ask you what. Just in looking over the survey, what you feel like surprised you most maybe about the answers this year? Because like you said, I mean, a lot of the stuff is from year to year is sort of the same. Like how many wins do you think Oklahoma State's going to have? It's always within like between 7 and 9 essentially. But what answers that people gave did you feel like surprised you out of all of them?
Well, I mean, the nice thing about having several years of kind of data to look back on is you see whenever things change a little bit. Like for example, this year, I think 61% said we were going to play in a national championship game in the next 10 years, and that was the lowest since 2010. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, why is that? Coming off a pretty darn good year, is that because of the new format and it's a little bit harder to get to a championship game because you have to go through the playoff? I don't know where that came from. You guys have any thoughts on that?
But isn't it getting easier, and doesn't the future look like it's going to be even easier to get into? I mean, I think the general consensus is the playoff will expand, and thus it makes it kind of easier to. I mean, for Oklahoma State right now, you basically have to go 12-0. We saw that in 2011. You got to go 12-0 to get in the title game, and now I don't think you necessarily have to. So I almost disagree that it's getting harder.
See, I think it's getting harder because not only do you probably have to go 12-0 to get in the playoff, you know, they were ranked behind Iowa last year.
I don't think they have to go 12-0 to get in the playoff.
I do. I mean, I
think we do. I think OSU doesn't, but I think OSU does, yeah.
I think if we learned anything last year, anything at all, it was the fact that OSU is, you know, it's a nationally known program. It's a top 25 program, but they're not getting any benefit of the doubt when it comes to polls and votes amongst, you know, people from not this area of the country. They were ranked behind Iowa last year. I mean, I guess I still can't get over that. So that's kind of, and not only do they have to,
all summer.
They have to go undefeated, and then you have to win two games in the playoff. Like that is just the craziest part about it.
But it's to play for a national championship. It's not to win it.
Well, to play for it, you got to beat a national title contender.
Yeah, I mean, my read on what went into this to the results from the survey were, you know, we were pretty good last year. I mean, we were 10-0 at one point. I don't know if anyone really believed we were that good, but then we all saw what it looked like when we played really good teams to close the season. And by the way, one of the teams that just destroyed us, OU, got destroyed themselves in the playoffs. So I think maybe that set people's mindset back a little bit on how hard it's going to be to get to a national title game. But anyway, that was one. Another one was that Barry Sanders Jr. I'm sorry, Barry J. Sanders What's that? Junior. Yeah, Junior. Yeah, as Gundy would say. Yeah, 26. We'll just call him 26. He says, or the fans said that he was, 64% of the fans say he was going to be our best running back, which I was kind of shocked at. I mean, I get the hype. I mean, his name's Barry Sanders, but I think people need to chill out on him a little bit. I think the word's getting out on that a little bit. I think I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. It'd be great if he was our best running back, but maybe that just says more about what people think about Carson, but I don't know. I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah. One more note on the national championship. I'm hung up on this. Oklahoma State basically did play for the national championship in 2011 because it was in the top four and they won their bowl game. So
they did beat a really good Stanford team that could have, been a national title.
Yeah.
So you're saying we would have under the new format, we would be in the national championship game. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry.
One of the things that stuck out to me, Dave, was I think you talked about the lack of people looking forward to this year or their interest level. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of goes back to what you mentioned with Oklahoma, the fact that they got beaten so bad by Baylor and Oklahoma, and then seeing Oklahoma get drubbed in the playoff. I think it kind of set fans' minds as just how far away they probably were from contending for the Big 12. And in reality, they're a legit Big 12 title contender. But I think that kind of speaks to the interest level being down, because I kind of identify with the OSU fans. I'm getting excited now, but like, I wasn't looking forward to it all summer. You know what I mean?
Well, and I think also, I mean, we kind of all bought into the, you know, the kind of fool's gold of the defense was pretty darn good, and turns out not really. And so I think, I mean, maybe this is just me, but I don't know. I'm very hesitant to get all that excited. I heard your last podcast, and you were almost hesitant to admit that you were getting excited about the year, but I am hesitant because I don't care if we start out the season 6-0, I'm not going to believe it, you know, until we actually get to the real, well, I probably will believe it, but I'm not going to believe it until we get to the real competition. And so, I mean, I'm sorry. I just, like, you know, that kind of plays into another thing I was going to bring up with the whole Yursich Spencer deal. You know, I asked people to rate the administrators and coaches, and Yursich got 3.2 stars out of 5, and Spencer got 4.2. And I mean, Spencer's was actually down a little bit from last year, but I just think people. I think people are starting to question, you know, I mean, not, I think Spencer's a good coach, but is he good enough to, you know, field a really solid defense? I don't know.
I like how on that coaches and administrators thing, Brad Underwood just slides in right ahead of Mike Holder and Mike Yursich. And it's what are we serious with the Mike? I mean, I get that people like don't like Holder, or they, I think like the percent, like they perceive that they don't like Holder. They don't actually know like anything about him. But I don't know. It just is.
But he hates Eddie Sutton, Kyle.
Yeah. Well,
okay. You know, obviously joking.
Yes. One of the things that surprised me, Dave, was the season satisfaction question. So this was a question about,
yeah.
Like, would you, it was a series of choices. Like, would you want to make the college football playoff and beat OU, or make a BCS bowl game and beat OU, or make a college football playoff and lose to OU? So going down the list. Obviously, number one is make the college football playoff and beat OU. But number two, ahead of making the college football playoff but losing to OU, was playing in a different, for lack of a better term, BCS bowl game and beating OU. I do not identify with that at all.
Yeah, I think that's just the, you know, the old mindset of, you know, you got to beat OU. So, I mean, you know, who cares that we make the college football playoff, but, you know, you lose the bragging rights to OU for a year. I don't know. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, it's hard to imagine a scenario where we lose to OU and still make the college football playoff, but whatever. I mean, if that were to happen, I'd be thrilled. So, yeah.
And Dave, I'm sure when you started this survey, you never dreamed that Barry Trammell would be writing articles about it. but he wrote a really good piece about how OSU fans are kind of pessimistic with their win total guesses. But yet you also argue in the survey that OSU fans are spoiled. So is that counterintuitive?
That's an interesting question. That's an interesting way to look at it. You know, the spoiled thing was actually, speaking of Barry Trammell, was his idea. I had a little back and forth email exchange with him and asked him what questions, you know, if he had any questions he wanted me to add. So he actually asked, he said, I'm curious to know if OSU fans think, you know, are they spoiled or not by the program's success? So that was his question. And I didn't really know what to make of those results, to be honest with you. It was kind of an ambiguous question. I mean, I didn't really explain what it meant, you know, to be spoiled, because I wanted people to just kind of take it and run. So, you know, most people did say that we are spoiled. So by the program's recent success. So does that mean that the true level of OSU football is actually lower than what we've seen lately? And that I mean, it's kind of like OSU basketball. We were all spoiled by Eddie in reaching the tournament every year. And you kind of look at what's the true level of OSU basketball? It's probably something lower than what we achieved under Eddie Sutton. Hopefully it's higher than what we achieved under Ford, but So maybe, I don't know. That's a good question, Carson. I don't think I can really hone in on the answer either.
What do you think, Kyle?
About the being spoiled versus,
yeah, are OSU fans spoiled or no when it comes to football?
Yeah, it's a hard question because you're basically judging the way you feel about something now versus the way you felt about the same thing like 10 years ago. And I think the difference is just like the level of expectations of like incoming college students is different now. And so I guess by that definition, if you're comparing like freshmen of 2016 to freshmen of like 1996, then they are, I guess my whole thing is like, I don't love the word spoiled because I feel like it has a negative connotation. Like your expectations have changed and they should have because Mike Gundy has been really good. And
facilities and all that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. But 10 years ago we were Iowa State or Kansas State, you know, and now we're not. I mean, because of what Pickens has done. So,
yeah. So yes, they are, but I think it's just, I like the term, like the expectations have been raised more than I like the term spoiled.
I would agree. The other thing, I think you guys talked about this already on another podcast, but Rudolph being number two among that group of quarterbacks that I listed, it's almost unfair to list a current player, because people are going to have the whole recency bias thing going on. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd rate him second among all of those quarterbacks. I mean, I think
he left off Michael Gundy. Where's Mike?
Well,
where's Mike?
I was trying to keep it pretty recent. I mean, the people in college have. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, the people in college or recent graduates, you know, never saw him play. I mean, heck, I barely saw him play. So,
I mean, I did too.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm not sure who I would clearly say is above him. Although, you know, if you look at it kind of as a career achievement thing, I mean, Zach or, you know, I mean, Fields, I don't know. Chelf is kind of underrated on this list, I feel like. But I thought that was interesting that fans have already kind of elevated him to the number two spot behind Whedon. So
let's rank them. Start with you, Dave. Then we'll go, man. Kyle.
I'm trying to remember who was on the list. I don't have it in front of me right now, but I mean, obviously Whedon's number one.
Whedon, Rudolph, Zach.
Survey was, yeah, Whedon, Rudolph, Zach, Josh Fields, J.W. Walsh, Clint Shelf.
I don't understand how Walsh is not last. I'll go.
Yeah, go ahead. Walsh has to be last. I agree.
I'll go Whedon one. The reason this question is difficult is because they all had such different supporting casts. I think Josh Fields is sort of criminally underrated because he was so good at a time when Oklahoma State was getting good. And then, like, you kind of throw Rudolph into this, like, great mix of, like, I don't know, his freshman year they weren't great, but Oklahoma State's just such a better program now than they were when Josh Fields was there. So I'll go Whedon one. I'll go Zach two. Just because we're trying to have him at our live podcast here in a few weeks. I think that Rudolph is eventually going to move up to two. So I'll go Fields three, Rudolph four, Chelf five, and JW six.
I'm going Whedon one.
Go ahead.
No, okay. I'm going Whedon one. I'm going Mike Gundy two. Guy started for 4 years.
He's not on the list.
You're inserting Gundy.
Him
okay.
In. He's a write-in candidate. I mean, he's a four-year starter. Like, that's... That's a better career than just about anyone on the list, right? Okay, anyway, Gundy 2. I'm going Josh Fields 3. I agree with you, Kyle. I think he's criminally underrated, just his career in general. I mean, he came in as a true freshman as well. I'll go Zach 4. I guess I'll go – I'm hesitant to rank a current player in Rudolph. I guess I'll go Rudolph, then Chelf, then Walsh. But
it's really hard with the current players.
I would listen to Chelf over Rudolph because Chelf beat OU twice, and the defense gave the game away. Like he led game-winning drives twice in Bedlam. He was a Justin Gilbert interception in both games. Remember the pick six in Norman that he dropped that turned into a Kenny Stills touchdown, and obviously the one he dropped in the freezing cold in Stillwater. If Gilbert hangs on to those two picks – Clint Chelf's got two Bedlam wins, and he might be number one or two on the list. So I rank Chelf pretty high.
Well, look, rather than repeating the exercise here, let me just ask you something. Like, these guys on this list here, I mean, game-winning drive. They're trotting out onto the field. Like, I feel supremely confident when Brandon Wheaton runs out on the field, obviously. I feel the same way about Zach and Chelsea. Like, I have no, I mean, they might screw up, but I have confidence they're going to make the right decisions. They're going to, you know, their leadership is great and all that. I'm not quite there with Rudolph yet. And maybe I'm, you know, behind on this, but I don't know. He's got the talent, no question. I believe in his arm. I mean, I'm trying to believe in what Gundy's talking about, this arm improvement, but I still like some of the decision-making that he makes sometimes. And then also just, I mean, the fumbles that he had, like the Texas game last year and stuff, just kind of the bonehead plays. I'm just not quite there yet with him in confidence, which makes me put him a little further down the list.
Did you know he has 6 come-from-behind wins in the second half? Mason Rudolph?
Yeah, I mean, he has some very impressive wins too under his belt. So, again, maybe I'm wrong about that, but it's just a feeling that I have. So I'm hoping that that feeling diminishes this year. I think it will.
Yeah, I think the other thing with this is it's such a different. We compare the numbers of like Josh Fields and even Rudolph, and it's like they're different offenses. Like they don't run as many plays. They didn't throw as much with Fields as they do under Rudolph. Now OKC Dave's gonna go like look up the passing stats from like 2002 to 2004 to make sure that's, you know, we got our very own fact checker here. But
I can tell you in that, like, remember the UCLA game where who was the back that ran for like 40 times or something like that? And Woods, I think Woods threw 8 passes or something.
Threw 8 passes, yeah. Yes, that was the number. Yeah. I remember that. It was unbelievable.
Gary Busey was on the sideline for that game at the Rose Bowl with the OSU
fans. Or I'm trying to hear who the back was.
But, that was Vernon Morency. Yeah.
Who was the fullback on that team that got Sean Willis?
Sean Willis.
Did he ever make it to the NFL?
I'm not sure.
He's a big guy. I remember seeing him at the Colvin one time, and I was scared. Like, he was coming out, I was coming in.
I was in row Z and scared of him in the stadium, so I can't imagine seeing him at the Colvin Center.
Up close.
Dave, another one I wanted to talk about with you is the best and worst home games in the Gundy era.
Yeah.
You said it doesn't get any worse than the 2013 Bedlam game. I tend to agree because that game was for the Big 12 championship. But 2010 Bedlam's hard to beat with Landry Jones throwing 2 like 80-yard touchdowns on back-to-back drives.
Oh, dude, that was – yeah, you're right.
After that game, I said out loud, OSU will never beat OU in football again.
Ever?
Ever. And they won the very next year.
Well, I know the feeling. But – I mean, but 13 though, we had it won. I mean, like we had the game was over. I mean, you know, the celebrations that people were having whenever we score with whatever it was, two minutes and change left. That game in Iowa State, I don't know that I'll ever really get over that. I really don't. I mean, 2010 was pretty bad too. Those long touchdown passes where the guy, who was it that just sneaks out of the backfield and catches an 80-yard pass. Oh,
terrible. James Hanna, tight end.
Thank you. Thank
Cameron
you.
Cameron Kinney before him.
I think I voted for a win as one of the worst home games ever, and it was the 15-10 Montana game.
Montana State. Oh. You hate that.
That was
the
Gundy opener, wasn't it?
Yeah, I never they should burn all of the footage of that game. I mean, it's a more viscerally pleasing experience to watch a game for the Big 12 title than it is to watch a 15-10. It was 15-10 Montana State. It was awful.
It was pretty bad. And then Houston, where did Houston finish up on that list?
They finished third.
Third.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought. So that was really bad.
In hindsight, it wasn't as bad though, because like they had Case Keenum, they had Dana Holgorsen running around. They were a really good team that year, but just coming off the Georgia law or the Georgia win rather, that is the most stunning part of it.
And you're right. The rest of the season was kind of a train wreck that year anyway, so it didn't really matter as much. But at the time, it just felt so bad because we thought, you know, we beat Georgia, we've elevated ourselves to this, you know, higher level. So yeah,
I'm kind of surprised that the Baylor game from last year is on there. I was reading something. the other day. I can't remember what it was, but it was something that OKC did. Oh, I think I went back to the 10 thoughts from that game because I was looking for a GIF or a Vine or something, and OKC Dave had written like, this game is like, it doesn't stick with me because like Baylor's just better. Like that's not a game. Like the games that really bother you are like Dave talked about, like in 2013 when OU, they weren't the better team in that game. Like they just weren't. And Baylor was last year, and it's like, well, you know, they're just better than we are. Like, I don't know what to do about that.
Yeah. It wasn't like a fluke deal or something like that. Or, you know, I mean, yeah, they were clearly, to me, the better team in that game. So that you're right. I remember writing that now. It's not a loss that really sticks with me that much.
And for me, I agree with the same line of thought with Kyle. Is the 2014 Texas game that they lost like 28-7, where they were just, OSU was just terrible.
Oh, it was awful.
Like, yeah. And that wasn't even a good Texas team, but OSU was just worse. You knew they, like, just watching the game, they had no chance to win.
That was the Big 12 version of the Montana State game.
Right. I would rank the game that they gave Texas the touchdown on the goal line higher on the gut punch loss.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty bad one. You know, that you guys just reminded me of that Texas game, that same season, losing to TCU on the road. I don't know if you guys remember that game or not. I went to that game and actually took my oldest son for his birthday. We were going to go have a fun weekend, Fort Worth, watch OSU on the road. We lost 41-9. We didn't move the ball past midfield in the second half. I mean, it was a disaster.
that was a throwback.
That was Dex Garman. Yeah, it was a throwback. Maybe it was good. Yeah, just kind of
throwback.
This is what it was like when I was your age, kiddo. But yeah, that was a.
An OSU football fan.
Yeah, and so people this year on the percentage chance to win each game, they had TCU at 49%. It's basically a toss-up to win that game, which I thought was a little bit high maybe, but I get it given that we beat them last year so badly. But the one that stuck out to me was OU, 36%. Like, seriously, OSU fans think we have a 1-in-3 chance of beating OU on the road this year? I don't know. I'm not there. I mean, I'm more like 10-15% on that game.
I'm with you. It is weird. I don't know if you've been following the FPI thing that ESPN puts out, kind of an index for, like, you know, how many players you have coming back, how good your offense and pretty stats heavy, pretty in depth, the kind of stuff that OKC Dave would like. But they say that Oklahoma State has a better than 50% chance of winning every game except for the OU game. And I was shocked. I think they said they had a 60% chance of beating TCU in Fort Worth. And this is sort of like the guy who created the FPI or people who created it basically say that it's, if Vegas released its power rankings, essentially, this is what it would look like. And are you guys surprised by that?
Yes. I'm not that confident.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really understand. Okay, last thing I want to ask you about, unless Carson has one other, is the point guard ranking historically. You had John Lucas, Marcus Smart, Doug Gottlieb. This is how they are ranked. Juwan Evans, 4th. Byron Eaton, 5th. Victor Williams, 6th. Do you agree with that?
I mean, a lot of it's how you look at it. I don't have a problem with that, with any of it. I think, you know, I get Lucas being number one. He hit the biggest shot, you know, in recent OSU history. I mean, you know, post IBA history, basically. So I get that. And he was a great point guard. I would probably put, I think I did put Gottlieb ahead of Smart, just because, you know, he was in college when I was. And so that's probably just nostalgia. But I mean, he was so fun to, he was just, his passes were so amazing. And he was a true point guard, you know. Smart, yeah, obviously he's, you know, probably one of the best players in OSU basketball history, but he just wasn't as fun to watch. So I think that's probably why I put him a little bit lower, at least not on a consistent basis. But the rest of it, I mean, Eaton probably, you know, well, Eaton did accomplish more in his career than Evans has so far, but I think I get people putting Evans above him just because it's almost like they're hoping that he ends up above him. So I don't have a big problem with any of those, really.
Carson?
I would have Lucas 1 by a wide margin because not only did he hit the biggest shot, not only did he make the Final Four, he was Big 12 Player of the Year. Yeah, like I think he was. I think people forget just how, on a nightly basis, how good he was at point guard. So I go him 1. I would put Marcus Smart too. I mean, he was a legitimate Big 12 Player of the Year candidate both years he was there. You know, he led a pretty ragtag. I mean, they had some good players, but I mean, they had no big men. I would put Marcus Smart too. I love Victor Williams so much. I love him so much more than like his career stats and anything remotely considering what he did in his career. But I think I have to put Gottlieb three. Or no, I would put Eton three ahead of Gottlieb. I think Doug was a really good point guard, one of the best passer I've ever seen in my life. But Eton had a really good career and really capped it off with a really an excellent senior year. I might put Eton three over Doug.
Oh, dude, man, I don't know about that. Gottlieb's, I mean, Gottlieb would make the teams that Eton were on. He'd make any team better. I mean,
I already regret that ranking. I'll put Doug over Eton. I forget how frustrating Eton was for three seasons.
We were all excited about Ford because he came in and all of a sudden Eton had, you know, played much better. We're like, wow, look at this. Travis Ford's getting the most out of players. But
Eton was like the original flopper. He flopped as much as Marcus Smart. People just forget. Mm-hmm. So for that reason alone, I'm sorry, Doug. I take it back. Doug three. Then Eton, then Victor. I can't rate Juwan Evans over anybody yet.
That might have been the last year anyone said Travis Ford gets the most out of his players.
Yeah, yeah.
First
no
and
doubt.
Last.
And Carson, I'm with you on Victor. That's why he was on the list. I was like, I don't care. I'm going to put him on there. Like, he really didn't belong in that group, to be honest with you. But I loved him too. I mean, he was, again, like I was there, you know, the first 2 years was Gottlieb. Last 2 years was that Victor, you know, Melvin group. So I had to put him on there.
I was as confident in Victor's pull up from the corner of the free throw, the key, as I was a Weeden to Blackman fade. It was that automatic. Remember, he would drive like lightning fast and just pull up at the free throw line. That was automatic.
Oh yeah, yeah. Great defensive player too. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, you guys. Anything else on the survey you guys want to talk about?
I want to quiz Dave about my number. You know, I'm ranking the OSU numbers. It's my own little survey, I guess.
Yeah, I saw
but
that.
But Dave, you know, I for people who don't know, I tweeted out the link, the list that I wrote in Chicken Scratch with my terrible handwriting. We're counting down the days to kickoff. You know, there's 16 days left. And for each day, you know, you're putting an OSU player who wore that number. So 16 is today. Obviously, Parrish Cox gets that. And there's a debate with some numbers. And OKC Dave, I had Markel Martin for number 10, and he wanted Tony Lindsay instead. And then Clint Chelf, obviously, honorable mention as well. Who would you have at number 10, Kyle?
Probably Mason Rudolph.
For just for that one win?
Yeah, just the one game. The two games. He won the Cactus Bowl.
Okay, yeah, the Cactus.
I did want to ask you how your boy Seth Newton feels about you leaving 15 blank instead of putting his name in there.
Well, we're in Twitter discussions right now as we're doing the podcast. I couldn't think of anyone at 15 and 6. I mean, I thought of Seth. Like he gets my vote, but me and Brian Keating were talking about it. And we wanted to put it out to Twitter to see if anyone had any better ideas because number 15, we were drawing blanks. But I think just for that reverse pass, my buddy Seth Newton should get it. Me and him were friends in college, so I probably should have just given it to him anyway.
I don't – 6 is a weird one.
You got Ricky Price. You got Andrew McGee.
Six
he
right
tweeted
now
it.
Is Lampkin, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
I got an old school OSU fan, Brian Giddings, suggested John Lewis, a receiver back in the day. Dave, you probably remember him.
I think he was number 7.
I think he was 6.
Let me put in a good word for my man, Tony Lindsay. All right. So Markel, yeah, I mean, I can't argue that. But Tony Lindsay was the quarterback during the most exciting time in OSU football that had occurred since, you know, post Barry Sanders. I mean, led us to, you know, a bowl game, which was unheard of at the time. National ranking. I remember looking at the AP poll when it came out in the paper and being like, seeing Oklahoma State's name was a new thing. I mean, come on. I think you got to throw up some love for good old TL.
I remember the first time in my lifetime seeing a number next to OSU's name, and it floored me. I was like, whoa, there's a 21 next to Oklahoma State's name. That's amazing. That'll never happen again. And you're right, Dave. Tony Lindsay, the last quarterback to beat Texas in Stillwater. They have not beaten Texas since 97 in Stillwater.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
I came back across. I forget all this stuff every year, and then I re-remember it in August and September. And I came across that stat yesterday and started getting irrationally uncomfortable.
About Texas?
Yeah.
Well, did you know they haven't beaten Baylor and Waco since 2009?
Wow. That's even crazier.
I mean, I know you'd only play there once every other year, but still, that's pretty shocking.
Yeah. That's wild. The Texas and Stillwater thing, though. Okay, we need to let OKC Dave go. We appreciate your time, man. And, yeah, you guys go follow him at OKC_Dave. And, yeah, we look forward to you pumping out a few things on the blog this fall.
Yeah, I may still put something out on your search, Spencer. I'm trying to think about how to best do that. But one more thing I wanted to say. You guys have done a great job since Coop came on board as a sponsor. When you talk about them, it's like organic. Like it sounds. I mean, like you're doing a good job of like, you know. I mean, not that, I mean, I think it is organic. You guys like the product, but do you guys listen to the JJ Redick's podcast?
Yes, I listened to it yesterday.
Okay, I think it's hilarious on there when they do their little ad reads. How he was talking to like Coach K, and then clearly there's like an edit where he comes in. He's like, "All right, Coach K, let me take a minute to tell you about Casper mattresses or something like that," you know. And it's
let me
so
tell you about
it sounds, yeah, yeah. It's like clearly he's not talking to Coach K anymore right now. He's just reading the ad. But anyway, you guys did a good job, and Coop, man, what a great sponsor to pick up. I buy their stuff already, but we'll buy a little more now that they're sponsoring you guys. So congrats on that.
That's awesome. I appreciate that.
Since you came on with us, Dave, we'll have to hook you up with like some Coop gear. So
even better. Yeah.
Okay. We'll talk to you later. All right, Dave.
Talk to you later. Bye.
See you.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Yeah. He's
okay. See, Dave.
He's always awesome. We need to have him on more than once a year. Speaking of Coop, we need to hear from them real quick as our sponsor this week. All right, listeners, have you heard the scoop about Coop? Oklahoma's signature craft brewer, Coop Ale Works, is now available at retailers in Arkansas, Kansas, Nebraska, and North Texas. And Cowboy fans in Kansas City, Missouri can grab a pack of Coop starting Labor Day weekend. Enjoy a fresh F5 IPA, my personal favorite, a native amber, elevator wheat, or horny toad blonde when you ask for Coop by name at your favorite store or bar. No matter where you roam, Coop pairs well with the Pokes. Okay, we are back.
I think you did Dave proud with that read right there.
Yeah.
You did it proud.
I did not go back and jump in and edit that. I got to get going here in a minute. I've got a lunch I got to get to. Anything else we want to touch on?
I want to run down my number list and see if you have any disagreements.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
16 Parrish Cox. Yeah. I don't think you disagree with that.
No.
15, we're writing in Seth Newton.
Yes, good.
14 is tough. I went with Bobby Reed.
I think Seth Newton had as many touchdown passes as J.W. Walsh.
He may have. He had several. And I mean, he threw it on a rope too. I think he was a high school quarterback up in Kansas, so he deserves to be on the list just for that, those reverse passes, no doubt.
Yeah, 14, Bobby Reed. I can't get the number 14 that he wore on those old OSU jerseys out of my head. It's so horrendous.
Same with 13, the hideous Josh Fields jerseys.
So bad.
Josh Fields is 13, obviously.
Yep.
Quinn Sharp, honorable mention there for 13.
Yeah.
Number 12, Michael Gundy.
Yes.
Honorable mention, I think I would have Darius Bowman, Paul Duren, friend of the pod.
Yeah.
Number 11 is a good one. Zach Robinson and Hartley Dykes.
That is a good one. Wes Lunt was what, 12 or 11?
He was 11.
Okay. Yeah.
Which he was so tall and skinny, that was a very fitting number. So
Zach and Hartley, you got to go. You got to go Hartley, right?
Yeah, I think Hartley's the guy. But Zach had such a great career. I think you got to include him too. And mainly we're picking guys we have video of. So I'm sure there's some like old time guys that had some of these numbers, but
yeah,
we don't have video of them. And number 10, I think, is the best one we have, at least within the top 16. Obviously, Markel Martin, Clint Shelf, and Tony Lindsay. Who would you go with?
Markel Martin, Clint Shelf, Tony Lindsay. Probably Lindsay. One of y'all mentioned this. I sort of feel like Shelf is a little historically underrated.
I do, too.
maybe not as much. Probably, I mean, definitely not as much as Josh Fields, but he was a good quarterback, you know. And like the whole Walsh thing was weird, and you threw a Wesson in there, and I don't know. Maybe he did have a really, really good defense in 2013. Maybe the best defense Oklahoma State's ever had. So you do have to factor that in. But I think you have to go Tony Lindsay for all the reasons that Dave mentioned. I mean, he really was sort of ushered in this post 1980s era, and you went down after that, obviously, in 2000, but then it got revived with Gundy later on. So I would go Tony Lindsay.
Well, and I can't remember, but I think he was like a 3 or 4 year starter. He played a long time too, so you might have to go with him. But it'd be fun just to cue up the video of Markel Martin hitting Robert Griffin.
Yeah, or the Markel Martin hit in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yep, just cue up all the hits.
Absurd. So. Are you going? Do you want to do 9-1 next week?
I mean, I already put the list out. But
when are you airing them though?
This until kickoff, all okay. The way to kickoff. One per day.
We'll talk about 1-9 next week because there's some really good ones in there.
Yeah, like I agree.
Ramon Richards at number 7.
He's the new number 7. Brandon Shepherd not getting any votes.
He was number. Yeah, I don't. Have we? Has Oklahoma State never had a great quarterback wear number 7?
I don't think so. They haven't had a lot of great quarterbacks.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, the list is short. I agree with you on Clint Shelf. I think he is the top of tier 2. You know, the tier 1, obviously Whedon, Fields. Then depending on how you feel about Zach,
Zach's a weird one because
he fluctuates depending on who you are, I think.
Yeah, like I don't know. I don't really know what to do with
him. You and I were in college during his reign, so we probably view him higher than most.
His reign of Stillwater.
Well, and you queue up all those videos of him just lobbing it up to Dez. You just wonder how much Dez had to do with everything, much like Rashawn with Fields. You know, you can't be a great quarterback without a great receiver. So
and Zach would say that. I think we forgot. Did we forget Gabe Lindsay in the number 11 discussion?
We did. I couldn't remember what number he was, but I brought him up yesterday. I was like, what number was Gabe Lindsay? Because Kyle always makes that joke that he was in college for like 8 years.
He was.
He caught a lot of swing passes.
Yes, yes, he did. Okay, Carson, great pod. OKC Dave was awesome. We really appreciate his time. Everybody that comes on gives us a lot of their time, and we're really thankful and grateful for that. And you guys keep rating and commenting on the show on iTunes. We're up to 43 5-star ratings, so it's basically like Alabama's 2010 class.
All the cruton.
Yep.
Go rate it. Go subscribe. That really helps the podcast. Can't stress that enough. But appreciate everyone listening, and let's keep on. Let's back at it next week.
Yep, back at it next week. Talk to you then.